Please welcome Dr. Christman.
Thank you.
Well, good morning. I take a little bit of a different spin, I guess, because I'm from a local health department, Southern Nevada. Okay. So I'm actually from the Southern Nevada Health District. I just kind of want to give you a local flavor and talk to you a little bit about, you know, who I am and what an informatician sees when we're looking at meaningful use and how to actually deploy all of these things at a local health department and a lot of the challenges and things we've seen here. So from a local perspective, essentially, we are a very unique state, and Southern Nevada Health District is in a very unique position because our local laboratories, hospitals, et cetera, all have to report to us via NRS, which is our state regulations, directly. So they cannot go through an HIE, they cannot go through the state. All of the hospitals and reporting agencies have to report to us directly. So it gives us a little bit different perspective. So specifically, Clark County, of interest, is about 2 million residents, about 400,000 visitors each day. So we have a high-risk transient population. Also, we have 2 commercial labs, 16 hospitals, 6,000 clinics. So it's a quite a different, diverse range of data that we get, you know, from a data stream for reportable conditions. But why am I here? I guess I was actually hired at the Southern Nevada Health District in late 2009. They needed a new disease surveillance system. As we were looking at that, we found the underlying infrastructure was not there to support the messages that were coming through. And ancillary, antiquated technologies such as phone calls, emails, etc. So we started to look at different technologies and see what was needed. And now, because of HIE and the meaningful use criteria, etc., I'm kind of here to talk to you about our specific challenges. And so I'm an informatician. As an informatician, you really try to think about, you know, for the sake of what am I doing this? How am I going to do this? And what are all the process steps? I come from a Six Sigma background in aerospace and defense manufacturing, so I look at, for interdisciplinary sciences to actually, you know, create a synergistic solution. So these are one of the things that, you know, make it a very difficult challenge and a formidable challenge for all of us. How many locals are here? No one. So from a local perspective, we're being bombarded with this data, and meaningful use is very, very vague. So if you think about the informatics challenges from meaningful use specifically, you'll notice one missing chair. Does anyone in this room particularly know who that missing chair is? Unfortunately, public health did not have a voice when meaningful use was constructed. And so if you look at meaningful use itself, the first informatics challenge that we have is meaningful use. You know, there is no clearly defined endpoint. There is no clearly defined project plan or task list for us to actually get to our endpoint. So, you know, it is ill-defined, and unfortunately that leaves us a lot of questions in the mix. And I think the most important, and what we're discussing here today, is ELR in specific is a fundamental practice that we all have to adopt at one point or another. So I wanted to go through some of the menu set objectives very quickly, just to look through these. And this is just the eligible professionals. And in this case, we're not using ELR, obviously, but the 2 priority items here that a local health department would be responsible for would be immunization registries and syndromic surveillance. Now, we have a lot on our plate in public health. And, you know, if we look to these things, are these fundamental processes specifically needed at the public health from a daily operational standpoint? So from an informatics challenge, you know, we have to support not only ELR, but now syndromic surveillance if that eligible provider chooses it, or the immunization registry and the ability to sustain that. So we have multiple things now that we're juggling, and now if we actually look at the hospital, now we add an ELR. So now we've got our hospital systems, our clinicians, and having to deal with this flood of data. Now it would be very easy for us to turn our cheek and say, okay, well, we're not going to pass them, and they'll still meet their stage 1 criteria. But we need to take this opportunity as the public health informatics community to make sure that we get our eligible providers, our hospitals on board now to get them motivated and moving forward to actually meet these objectives. Okay, so today's focus in specific is on ELR. So I apologize for kind of giving you my two-minute dissertation on meaningful use and the problems that I see with it. But here, our biggest problem in Nevada at a local health department is that there is no mandate for ELR. So our regulations basically state in the state of Nevada that they can report to us in any way that they choose. And it's unfortunate because that doesn't dictate nomenclature, it doesn't dictate syntax, it doesn't dictate method of delivery. So one of the first things we really need to address are those legal mandates that need to happen to actually meet meaningful use. And again, you know, while there are vague requirements, you know, our hospital systems are going to have to change their business processes, our clinicians are going to have to change their business process. There's a lot more that goes into this than just necessarily the technologies that are available to us. We need to think about the legal issues and, you know, and just the community at large. So meaningful use in specific, I believe, needs to have more granular definition of what do we really need to do, and these are the steps it takes to get there. You know, the messaging guides are great, RCMT is fantastic, you know, and we build upon all of those technologies and resources that are available to us, but it's still a very difficult and formidable challenge, especially at a local health department. Our, you know, our budget is very limited, and the resources we have are limited as well. So I'm actually going to go specific into workflow at this point. And as you all know, you know, we're using a bunch of different antiquated technologies and processes that have been around for many years. And they've been single-purposed. They've existed in silos. Nothing has been integrated. And we need to think about all of these things before we start moving forward. So better planning is going to end up with a better result. A lot of the technologies that we're going to talk about specifically have exceeded their end of life. So for instance, if we look at the workflow, the as-is workflow, and what you're doing today, and I'm going through a workflow because I want you to think through the flow and each component that's used within that flow. So we have obviously our data sources or our data partners, and we have the legal agreements we have to establish with them, and some of them need to meet meaningful use and others don't, so we need to keep that in mind. So for instance, the large commercial labs, there's no incentive for those folks to meet meaningful use. So the hospital systems, we're still going to have these transport mechanisms, these consumption mechanisms in place, and have to deal with, you know, the variety of messages that they could send you. How many of you folks get CSVs, flat files, maybe some HL7, but it's still in 231, you know, and I think 2.5 was mandated, what, in 2006, is that correct? So we really haven't caught up because we're not focused, and there's too much going on at one time. But if we look, for instance, at FinMS, FinMS has been around for 10 years. The processes have changed since FinMS was initially developed, so we need to do a reevaluation of FinMS and eWebit and look at those transport mechanisms and look at, you know, who's actually going to be using it. If you take FinMS to a hospital system, are they going to deploy it in their environment? Most likely not. They're not going to want to have another piece of software that's not theirs in their system to deploy and maintain. So using standardized protocols for a lot of these things is probably the way to go, and I'm sure your data partners would agree. From a receipt standpoint, a lot of these things were directed, you know, for CDC reporting, and FinMS was specifically built with the intent of a state to talk to NBS, and for an NBS to talk to CDC. That was its initial intent. So this is a very siloed, you know, workflow that you see here. But what it didn't take into account was the integration piece. It didn't take into account normalization, standardization, and I think most importantly, the application and integration of knowledge into your workflow. So our proposal is this 2B informatics-based workflow. And this is a completely open source architecture, and if you caught my panel yesterday, you've heard somewhat about this open source architecture that we've built in Southern Nevada to facilitate all of this. So essentially, utilizing any type of transport mechanism, which is exactly where FinMS needs to go. It needs to support any type of protocol that can be developed or is in use today. We use MIRTH. Sorry, Paul. But we use MIRTH. I'm familiar with MIRTH. I worked with Commander Emery Fry on a project with the Naval Health Research Center. And I was exposed to Mirth, and it is, you know, a phenomenal integration engine that is open source. Now, again, I was charged to do this with absolutely no budget, very limited time frame, and I built all of the components that you see here within a span of about 3 to 6 months, including all of the ontology definitions, all the mapping, the rules engine, all of the things I'm going to show you was all done in that time frame and is now going to be released open source and freely available to the public health community. But the integration takes care of all of the transformation, and I apologize, I could have shown you some more detailed slides, but I did that yesterday. But Mirth, we actually look at the transport of that message, the consumption into a single receiver, and then our first step is this normalization step, and we use OAG. Are any of you familiar with OAG? No one. Okay. Are you all familiar with HL7? Okay. So OAG in the early 90s was a... you have W3C consortium, the W3C consortium. You have OASIS and OAGIS. OAGIS is another standards body that's been around for since 1992, I believe, when I was involved with it. And what we did is we actually standardized message interoperability between manufacturing systems across the world and all of their end-tier suppliers. So what we're talking about today in ELR is nothing new. This has been done. It has been done in other industries, and we need to think about that and leverage our other industry experience. And OAG is an extensible framework of a business object documents that represent transport of specific business entities. So, for instance, within your enterprise, you have specific tasks that go on. And those tasks are represented, and the data that's represented by those tasks as an OAG business object document that is representative of all the elements necessary to complete that transaction. Now, for any of the HL7 people, and I apologize because I know we spoke to this earlier, this is an open framework. HL7 is a licensed framework. I'm an open source person. I'm looking to build the community and make these things freely available to you. And this is an alternative for internal communication within your enterprise and movement of data within your enterprise, because we're not just talking about an ELR message. We are talking about messaging. And messaging within your enterprise could be school district data, environmental health data. It could be other things outside of ELR. We need to stop focusing just on ELR and start thinking of the bigger picture, asynchronous transactions. How do I go and get data from my provider once I've gotten the ELR message and my rules engine fires and says, hey, I need ADT or H&P information, go and get that. So we need to start thinking bigger picture and not necessarily smaller scope. So with that, we use Apollon as a standardized terminology server. Is anyone here familiar with Apollon or terminology server? Okay, so I got two heads shaking. It's good. But let's see if we can't get everybody else in tune with what this is. Apollon is a terminology server that allows us to define ontologies. Okay, so RCMT is a project, and actually thank you very much for it. So we, about 8 months ago when we started going down this path, we did our own RCMT, but in a very limited scale. So when I saw that project, and I'm sure you see that I sat on the phone calls, is I'm very happy to be taking RCMT and now transitioning it into something that I can use. And essentially what we're going to do is create ontologies out of the RCMT and then rules based on the case definitions that CSTE put forward using a rules repository, which actually can be integrated into the workflow at any stage. So if you need to fire rules that are global, if you need to fire rules, after normalization, standardization, or application of knowledge, you can do this at any time. And the framework allows you to do that. It's very, very flexible. So you have a message that comes in now from your data partner. It gets integrated, it gets normalized into this business object document so that I only have to maintain one type of, API or call out or web service, to actually do anything with that. I can standardize all of the terminologies now, LOINC, SNOMED, ICD, etc., and I can apply knowledge at any state, including I get this message, I need to route it to a specific, HIV, STD, etc. It interrogates the message, it knows what the message context is, and it delivers it to its appropriate location. So all the routing is all automated, all the case creation can be automated. It's a very robust solution. So with that, and I put up a manufacturing assembly line because we need to start thinking in a modular implementation. We need to think about these modular pieces that actually make up, you know, they're like bricks that make up a wall. And specifically, if you've ever read The Wealth of Nations, Adam Smith's book, that's how Henry Ford actually created the first assembly line in 1908, I believe it was. And the assembly line is actually interchangeable parts, modularity, reusability. These are all of the standard practices that us as software developers and informaticians use on a daily basis, trying to think of how to actually leverage our architecture. So, and you may have seen this yesterday, and I'm just going to go over this a little bit different. We focused on the Office of Epidemiology, but it's actually the practice of epidemiology, and we need to think about that, and what are the inherent challenges of epidemiology in ELR, and specifically, how much data are we going to get, and what are we going to do with all of this data once we get it? What's necessary? What's important? You know, how am I going to visualize this? You know, you need to start thinking about those things, otherwise you're going to drown in data. So with that, this messaging infrastructure was built, and around it were actually other components, because obviously you have to have a disease surveillance system or some type of investigation system, the data warehouse to actually abstract that data marts that actually take that and further abstract it into something that your end users can understand, and then finally analysis, visualization, and reporting components. These are all inherent informatics challenges, because it's not just the delivery of the data, it's actually what are the inputs and then what are the outputs of this data, and for the sake of what am I doing this? So with the messaging bus, and we're actually, it's very close to a service-oriented architecture where a lot of these things can exist elsewhere. So Apollon, Drools, and your MIRTH more or less can exist in a cloud. So what we're looking at doing from an informatics challenge is not all of us independently architecting the RCMT and creating the ontologies independently. It's utilizing, for instance, Apollon to have one common storage place for the RCMT and the ontologies necessary for you to do your business in a cloud, and a comprehensive web service tier for you to hit, so that you can get that information at any given time. It's always up to date. We maintain it in one place rather than each of us doing our business independently. And I know this is a big shift in the way you've done business, for the past 30 years, but we need to start thinking down this line. The same holds true for a rules repository. You all have the same types of rules. Now, while what your reportable conditions are at your local jurisdictions and state levels may differ, those applicable rules can be, authored and executed by you and you alone, but the repository for that information, the authoring, can happen as a group, as the community. And I think that's one of the focus of, of my talk and meaningful use specifically, is kind of changing the paradigm and thinking about a community and what we're doing here today, rather than us as independent entities. So we're also looking at another component to this messaging bus. Now, we've all discussed master patient index. How many of you are using master patient index for deduplication, probabilistic matching, all of that good stuff? Is everybody here using that? Nobody. Nobody raised the hand. So, interestingly enough, and I have a huge problem with a master patient index, because it's really a master entity index. And those things need to be characteristic driven, because it's not just about a patient. You have to remember the other programs are involved in your enterprise. You've got, environmental health. You have, different, it could be a tattoo parlor. It could be, I'm from Vegas, they're a dime a dozen. So, we have to think about those things. But the point being is you need to be able to support the entity and not necessarily just the patient. A patient is just a type of entity. So we need to think about those things and probabilistic matching and deduplication, because we're going to get a ton of data in from different sources, and there's the potential for quite a bit of data redundancy. So again, this is an open source framework. Everything that we are proposing here today is an open source framework and will be freely available to you within the next several months, and hopefully based on Perry and my schedule over the next few months, we'll see exactly when this is made available, but we're going to be busy. But I wanted to, are all of you familiar with open source? I mean, do you really know what it is and how it works? Okay. Well, I'm a big proponent of open source, and I just want to give you a very high-level 10,000-foot view. So, obviously, it makes the source code available. So we as a community of public health informaticians, we are responsible for building it. And we are responsible to make sure that source code that we leverage each of our, resources and make these things available. So now we're not a community of one, now we're a community of PHI, CSTE, and all of these other folks that are actually building and supporting the community at large, because we're all doing business in a very similar way. Right now, Perry and I are looking at source integrity, and all of you know Perry Smith, who's sitting in front here from New York, and we're trying to figure out the best model for this and how this would work. And how do we keep the source? Who owns the source? You know, what is that common ground? And where do we all go, you know, to actually utilize and propagate this across the PHI community? Don't be fooled. There is not a free beer, right? I mean, at the end of the day, there are going to be costs. Now, if you want additional support, you can get additional support. Some of these have enterprise support licenses. Do we want to have support in-house? And these are things together that we're going to need to figure out if this community is to grow. But there are some upfront costs. And typically those costs, you know, you have some maintenance and things of that nature, but there are some indirects. But typically the costs are much lower than going with an enterprise-wide solution. It is technology neutral. You can develop in any language that you want, as long as it falls under the licensing and Creative Commons, you know, one of the other open source types licensures that are available to you. But the beauty of this is right here. Well, she's got a mustache, so it's really not beauty, but derivative works. It allows you to do derivative works at any given time, so you can actually fork off of that open source platform and say, you know what, I'm going to start looking at something on my own and not affect the community. So you can do different ad hoc outbreaks, things of that nature, and it wouldn't have any impact on the community at large. But the big pieces are the collaborative and governing body. Now, while we are here today, this is really us. I mean, at the end of the day, if we think about it, is PHI a governing body? Is CDC a governing body? Is CSTE a governing body? Who, at the end of the day, is going to be our governing body? So, to put this in context, the source code being available, for instance, we all know CSTE could be a case definition or the RCMT. They make these things freely available to us. These are resources. They are practicing open source right now. From a source integrity, the CDC, as we just talked about, is actually holding that in the repository at the CDC and making it available to all of you in the community. So again, they're practicing open source without really practicing open source, I guess, right? And the licensure here would be all of the public health community, not necessarily Creative Commons or something to that effect, but the public health community at large could utilize any of these resources, and that's who they're made available to. And again, a derivative works could be anything. You know, you can go off in your own direction at any given time, take the source code, pick it up, and do whatever you need to do with it without hurting the community. But we need to focus on what we're here to talk about today, which is the collaborative. You know, meaningful use is hard as an entity of one, but meaningful use can be much easier and having to, you know, try and meet some of these challenges as a group. And, you know, since I've been in public health and I've been to CSTE a couple of different times, this is my first PHI meeting, I've heard a lot of the same complaints and issues over and over and over again, with not necessarily any good direction, no task list of how to actually accomplish putting these things into practice. At both the state and local level, together we can do this. We need to sit down and outline a plan of attack and a roadmap of how to get there for both state and local jurisdictions alike. So I'm not sure if you've ever seen this, but I had to put this one in here, the drinking from the fire hose. No. essentially, you know, my concern is that, you know, now that we've got the ability to normalize this data, standardize the data, consume the data, what do we do with the data? And, you know, meaningful use says, okay, well, we want to get all this data to you. That's fine. But you as public health practitioners and subject matter experts, what are you going to do with the data? Why are you getting the data? What data are you getting? You know, just because it's ELR, you know, and it may or may not be reportable, you know, do you want all of the data that comes along with it? And then, you know, what's important to you? And we need to start thinking about those things. Again, I guess it's like a dog trying to run after a car, right? At the end of the day, if a dog catches the car, what's the dog going to do with the car, right? So we really need to start thinking about these things. We need to, as a community, collaborate rather than independently go off in our own silos and create this, you know, further siloed environment and, you know, and help one another. So I'll leave you with this, and again, you know, one more standard is exactly what we need. So thank you very much for your time.
I'll do my Vanna White. Any questions?
Thanks for the excellent presentation, Jeffrey. I saw what your comments yesterday as well.
Wonderful.
It's starting to sink in a little bit.
Okay.
So, just one question regarding, you know, our responsibility to be financial stewards as well in the work that we do. And I'm with the state government.
Mm-hmm.
So, at least one example I'm aware of is like Linux.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kicking things like Sun Unix off the platform so that. But to be responsible, we went with a supported version of it. Do you see that sort of a model ever evolving with what you're talking about here, that there would be a fully supported sort of version?
Absolutely. And Perry and I are actually looking currently at all of these things, at looking at governing bodies, how to establish these, what processes are needed, and analyzing, you know, from start to finish, you know, in this enterprise, what is necessary to facilitate not just EOR, but messaging, and not just, you know, epidemiology, the Office of Epidemiology, but the practice of, and then the outputs that are necessary. How many epi curves do you want to create? But, you know, at the end of the day, the governing body, the supporting entities, all of those things will all be built in to this. You know, I'm not sure that CDC... And, you know, I don't know, so I'm not speaking for CDC, but I'm not sure that they want to be in the business of being a software vendor and creating software and then supporting software. It's a big task. CDC does things very well at CDC, but software may not be, you know, their industry. So looking at alternatives, especially for a community as large as ours, is important. And I think that sustaining model is also important. So we together, again, need to figure out what is the best model to build a sustainable community, you know, open source and leverage our resources together, especially in this time when we have no money. I mean, at the end of the day, this is the time to do it, right now. You're welcome.
Being one of the naive ones in terms of open source, can you comment more about how governance happens with open source at a more detailed level? Because the challenge, of course, is that there are so many players and there are so many needs.
Absolutely.
Business needs. How do you make decisions? Practically speaking, how does decisions get made in open source?
Well, and typically we look at frameworks like the Apache framework, you know, different Linux, you know, frameworks, those folks. And we think about how did they actually create these community? Who governs these community and how does it work? Well, you know, obviously there are different licensures available. So there's, you know, freely distributed, the Creative Commons license, etc. So there are different levels of licenses available, and there are also different levels of participation. So you can participate as a subject matter expert and, you know, lend ideas, etc. You can participate actively as a contributor. So, and essentially what that governance body does is there are specific, you know, sets of criteria, you know, and standards, etc., for coding and for commitments, you know, from the community, you know, to actually move these things forward. They, you know, create the roadmap with the community about what goes on, and it is completely transparent. So this is actually something that's, you know, built from and by the community. You know, the community is driving it. So the government. Absolutely. And in fact, you know, one of the open source communities that I'm a part of at the moment, you know, we have, you know, there's IRC chats and, you know, the different type of scrums that you go through and utilities that you use for managing your code set and who's doing what. And then we have virtual, you know, conferences and we talk. So, you know, and these are very important, but that governing body is actually responsible for the project plan, the task list, the priorities, and making sure that those meet the need of the community. And that's the most important thing, because right now we need, in public health, to meet the need of the community.